Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and today we welcome Ed Agostino and Savneet Singh to the program. As you may be aware, Peak Prosperity endorses the Hard Assets Alliance as a preferred platform for purchasing gold and silver. And given all the recent volatility in the price of the precious metals, as well as rising premiums and tightening supply for physical bullion, we thought it would be timely to talk with the folks operating HAA and to get their take on this situation. Ed is the general manager of the Hard Assets Alliance, and Savneet is president and co-founder of Gold Bullion International, the institutional trading platform that powers the Hard Assets Alliance. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great to be here, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
Great. So, Ed, before we dive into the recent market action, which I know everybody wants to hear about, perhaps you can give us a quick summary of the mission behind the Hard Assets Alliance and why it was created just about a year ago, I guess, now.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Basically, the people, the principals behind the Hard Assets Alliance are also in the financial newsletter publishing business and specialize in precious metal miners and gold and silver. So we've always been interested in the space and invest in the space, and we wanted to get into the precious metal market directly, but for years hadn't really found the right vehicle. We'd gone pretty far down the road, actually, in developing our own private depository outside of the U.S., ultimately decided that just wasn't the right fit for us, and we're struggling a little bit with the right model to go to market for our readers. And that's when we met Savneet. Savneet had a need as well. He was interested in expanding the reach of his company beyond institutions and large funds to the individual investor, but didn't really have the reach or the infrastructure to do that. So it really was a great fit for us. We love their platform, the ability to store overseas or domestically, and we love the trading platform that they have set up because it offers great price transparency and competitiveness. So we took it one step further, and instead of just doing this platform on our own, we invited essentially all of our friends to join us. So we invited any and all information providers, websites, newsletter publishers to come and join us, get behind one best-of-breed platform, and that really was the genesis of the Hard Assets Alliance. And so that's where we are today.
So there was meeting a need that wasn't really filled out there, and certainly, you know, at peakprosperity.com, people can find out a lot of the actual benefits that exist in the HAA platform, which we think are quite numerous and really quite good. And a lot of what stitches all of that together, of course, is the magic of the trading platform. So, Savneet, what is the Gold Bullion International platform, and what advantages does it really bring to the market?
Sure. Thanks, Chris. I guess I'll step back and talk a little bit of the genesis of the platform. Around 2009, myself and a couple of my partners were trying to acquire gold. And when we went out to try to execute it, we found it extremely cumbersome and difficult. You know, you were either forced to call up a Swiss bank, and if you didn't have $20 million, it just wasn't really available to you. Or you had to go to an online website or a store where you might not be completely comfortable with, you know, the quality of the gold, the service, the ability to sell it back. It just wasn't a robust service. And we found it very odd that when we're buying stocks and bonds, the ability to trade online has become so robust, but it hasn't really happened in precious metals. And so what we did was we, over a long period of time, convinced the large precious metals dealers around the world to tie into a technology platform where they would be able to bid on orders from our clients, and we would be able to then take client orders, bid it out to this market of dealers, get our clients the best price, and then provide a really robust back end for storage, insurance, and audit. And essentially what we think we've done is created the first truly ubiquitous platform or exchange for people to buy and trade the physical assets. So we don't do any futures, any derivatives. It's all pure physical precious metals. It's gone fantastic. We've been able to really collapse pricing for our clients. We've been able to become store metals in 7 or 8 locations all around the world. And the Hard Assets Alliance is a key part of our growth strategy.
Great. So this platform is really matching buyers and sellers, but you're tapping into a very deep, very liquid market. There's a wide variety of metal sources that exist out there that would range from, well, what are those sources that you're tapping into right now, just generally speaking?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so everything we do is what's called on an agency basis. So we take an order, we bid it out to our market of dealers, and whatever dealer bids the best price gets the transaction. So we're not even matching buyers and sellers and taking a spread ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're literally finding the dealer who has the best price at that moment in time. So if you came in and said, I want to buy $10,000 of silver, that order would hit our system. We would execute with the dealer who has the best price and then literally take those bars or coins to the location you've asked us to store it in and feed all that data back into whatever order or system you ordered from. So if it was a hard asset alliance, in your hard asset alliance account, you'll have the record date, the trade date, the settlement date, the positions all on your statement, all available to be sold also online. So it's complete. It gives the retail investor access to institutional pricing and institutional service.
And so how many dealers are in that network right now?
We have about 15 dealers, and these vary from refiners, so the large refiners, to what we call bullion dealers, so are people who specialize in trading bullion but aren't banks or stores. And then we have the actual bullion banks who participate in our network as well.
So pretty wide market structure there.
Yeah, the thesis is, you know, if one day, for example, the banks go out of business, we have dealers we can go to. If the dealers go out of business, we have the refiners and so on and so forth. So the goal was to have extreme diversity in supply so that we always had availability in all the locations that we're selling in now.
Excellent. Well, let's get right to what happened recently. So in the wake of this very historic price decline that we saw in gold and silver that happened on Friday and Monday of the week prior to the recording of this podcast, what are you seeing now in your marketplace experience in terms of the balance of buying and selling? So I'm interested in what's happening to premiums, delivery times, inventories. Let's start with gold.
Okay. So to keep short, I mean, it's been tremendous. So on Friday and Monday, when we had the two large days of selling, we at GBI had some of our biggest days of all time. So we had 4 to 5 as many buy orders as sell orders, both in number of trades and actually in volume traded. So significant, far more significant buying than selling, and it's continued throughout the week. So the buying has been just tremendous on the gold side,
mm-hmm.
And it's been robust across markets. So both in the United States and also in our overseas locations, it's been consistent across the board. And it's actually representative across all of our dealers when we survey our dealers to get their feelings of what's happening. It's just been off the charts. Our refiners had 2 times as many orders as they usually do. Our bullion dealers, on average, had 3 to 5 times as many orders as they normally do. And our bullion banks had the same type of positive inflows versus outflows.
And that's the same with the Hard Assets Alliance. So we've seen record inflows of cash deposits over the last 2 weeks. And purchases have far outnumbered, basically 9 to 1 at the Hard Assets Alliance for purchases versus sales of positions.
And what about, Ed, silver versus gold? Any differences there, or you've seen strong demand in both?
Right now, we offer silver in the U.S., and about a month ago, we started offering silver in Melbourne, and last week, we started offering it in Singapore. So if I look just at the U.S., I would say it's still about 50-50. Hard Assets Alliance customers tend to like silver just as much as gold.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been pretty consistent over time, including the last 2 weeks.
Right. So just it's you're recording very strong demand, and it's pretty evenly spread between gold and silver, at least among the hard assets client base at this point.
That's correct.
All right. And Savneet, in silver, is that hold true from what you're seeing across the larger platform experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that the clients of Hard Assets Alliance have definitely taken advantage of the silver depressed price more than our other clients, but it has been across all our platforms. And, you know, silver is really fascinating to us right now because, you know, for most dealers who are trying to get access to silver coins, they're waiting 5 to 8 weeks for delivery because the production is so delayed, and delayed because of large demand. So silver is where you're seeing production delays, settlement delays, and access being tighter and tighter.
And are you experiencing that same tightness within your network as well? Or are any silver products in your inventory in short supply right now?
I would say because we have such a wide network of dealers, we're able to generally get supply. But, you know, if this continues, I think in the coins we might have to slow down. But broadly, I would think if you called any dealer right now, they would have a very hard time getting you the very popular silver coins that exist. It's just the demand was so much bigger than anyone had expected that the supply doesn't exist. Or the supply exists, but it takes time to get it back into the system.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's my experience, having been in the gold and silver markets for about 13 years now, I've never seen a price decline have this counterintuitive, I guess, sort of response on the part of the buying public. In times past, I've noted that, you know, sales sometimes spike during down periods as weekends get shaken out. So I don't know how to interpret this besides there aren't that many weekends in the business at this point, or people recognize a buying opportunity when they see it. But for whatever reason, this price decline resulted across the board in a pretty large explosion in buying interest, and it was across many different cultures. So this isn't just a U.S. perspective. I don't have firsthand knowledge, but I read the newspapers and see what's happening with buying in China, buying in across Asia, in India, in Europe, and even today the Royal Mint out of the UK is reporting that they've seen an explosion in demand there too. So it looks pretty worldwide at this point. Would you concur, or is there any wrinkles in that story?
Just adding that on our side, we have newsletter editors in Singapore and Thailand, and they're all saying the same thing, that whenever they walk by physical dealers, the line is literally out the door and around the corner.
You know, internationally, you traditionally see huge buying after a price sell-off, and then since you had such a huge sell-off, I think you had more buying than people ever imagined internationally. What was unique about this sell-off is that it was in the United States as well, and Ed can comment on the hard assets alliance, but I think we saw it there as well, which traditionally happens abroad, and I just think it's the education that the newsletter partners of HA have done a great job of educating their customers or their clients about, you know, taking advantage of dips like this. What is even more unique is historically in our business, when we've had a price decline, we've had sales, and when we've had huge price runs, we've had lots of buying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not often that within the same day of a huge price decline, we had such significant buying. So it was different in other very large days in our company's history, and that intraday you just had such counterintuitive buying.
And such a big disconnect between spot price and the actual price that you're going to pay for physical, particularly on the silver side. I mean, you could make the argument that spot price is becoming irrelevant relative to the physical market, because silver's well north of a 20% premium over spot right now.
20%, wow. And that just erupted. I remember I was shocked when it went to 7, then 8, then 10 in the days, right, you know, Friday and then Monday and into Tuesday. But now it seems to have spiked even higher. I found a couple of online dealers that I think the average now for Silver Eagles is 8 or 850 over spot. So that's pretty high, and it just speaks to real tightness in the market. I'm wondering, do you expect this demand to continue? I know this is a bit of a speculation game here, but what I'm really getting at is, let me ask this question more directly. How long can this demand continue before there might be a danger of physical supply simply being overwhelmed, that there's just no chance to meet the demand? How big is the pipeline relative to what demand is right now, and how big does demand have to be before that pipeline essentially breaks?
Obviously it's very hard to predict. I don't think anyone would have predicted a price sell-off like we saw, so it's hard to predict the future. What I would say is, you know, the fundamentals of owning gold haven't changed one bit. I think the price has changed, but the fundamentals haven't changed. And if you have that value investing mentality built within mm-hmm. you, I think we'll continue to see some solid buying. Second layer, which, you know, people don't often talk about, but I think is important, is the education on gold has increased dramatically in the last 2 years. The amount of articles, the amount of research, the amount of demand has led to education. And that education is the best way to create long-term demand. And so I think, you know, when we had this price decline, I was surprised that our institutional clients were buying just like our retail clients were, when historically our institutional clients would dump during a sell-off and buy during an uptrend. So I think the second element is that since more people are aware about gold and have access to it, it does put a stepping stone into a nice long-term demand trend. But, you know, in the short term, it's just very, very hard to predict because clearly there are other forces that work besides the physical markets.
I think the other thing that you'll see in the short term, Chris, is, like, for example, the U.S. Mint is pulling back on manufacturing 10th of an ounce Eagles or coins. You're not going to be able to get those for quite a while, I would say. Once they run out, they're going to be gone for a while.
And that's always the U.S. Mint confuses me. They've done this before where they say demand is so high, we've decided to stop. Is this because they're just going to concentrate on minting other things? I would have thought that the production runs where you produced 1/10 ounce would have been slightly different presses and dies from the ones where you're producing the 1 ounce coins. Maybe I have that wrong, but is there something odd in that they're doing that, or are they just overwhelmed and concentrating on larger coins at this point?
I think that it's the latter. I think that they're overwhelmed with the demand, and so they're just focusing on the 1 ounce coins.
Mm-hmm. Right. So here's what I was trying to get at with a prior question is this sense that I can still walk into a party with 100 people and find maybe one other person who's invested in gold or silver, and maybe I'd have to go to 200 people to find somebody who actually did it in the physical form, not through GLD or SLV or any other ETF at this point. So physical ownership is still relatively a small percentage, and I'm going to guess that when the price got knocked down, that the people who stepped up to the plate to buy more were probably that same crowd. Maybe the crowd expanded a tiny bit. And my perception is that even with that sort of surge of demand, as tiny as it was relative to the overall percentage, that we found the dealer inventories for popular retail products just got swamped and eliminated. So the question is the system ready for really large public participation that might be measured in whole percentages? Like when I can walk into a party and find 5 people out of 100, how do you think the system will fare?
From my perspective, I think that there's going to be some serious supply constraint. I think that once I agree, we're nowhere near mainstream yet. We frequently tell people that everyone should have some sort of allocation to precious metals, whether it's 5%, 10%, whatever is comfortable for you and your personal situation. But I agree. I get the same reaction when people ask me what I do for a living, and I say I'm in the precious metal business. Most of them don't even know what that means. So once more conventional retail investors wake up to the fact that they need some sort of protection in their portfolio against debasement of currency and inflation, the demand is going to surge. Even if everyone decides, well, I'd like to have 3% or 4%, 5%, there's strength in numbers.
Absolutely. And Savneet, from your end, before we started the recording of this podcast, you and I were talking about how there's that the precious metals market is very large. It's very liquid. There's really the precious metals move around rather freely. Do you see a point where it could get physically tight, or do you think that's really still pretty far from where we are at this moment?
First answer, yes. Second answer, at this moment, particularly on gold, I just don't see there being a shortage. I mean, some of our new clients are even ETFs and closed-end funds themselves who are looking for a better way to buy, and we've never had a problem being able to coordinate extremely large purchases for them. In silver, I think you'll absolutely, we've already hit kind of the capacity on the silver coin side where there's just not enough out there to satisfy demand. And because that demand is centralized around coins, people will have to wait for what mints want to do, whether it's the Royal Mint, whether it's the U.S. Mint, Canadian Mint. You are kind of tied to the supply of one producer. In silver bars, it's a little bit better, but silver is just a much smaller market than gold is, and I think you're going to absolutely be exposed to shortages there. On the gold side, there's two things at play. I think if gold ever became truly mainstream, as Ed was talking, absolutely. There's not, clearly if gold's total market value is $5 or $6 trillion, if 1% or 2% of that world assets were there, at current price, there's just not enough of it. So two things happen: either you have a gigantic price re-rating, or you don't have supply. So I think you get into that standpoint if and when you get to the point that demand is that large.
Excellent. Well, speaking of demand, let's talk about something that's really been on my mind and I've been writing about it is the flow of gold from west to east. There have been a lot of stories about that. Of course, we've seen India's demand somewhere between 800 and 900 tons for the past 3 years running, which is really quite high. You have China being the number two producer in the world, exporting zero, but importing, I think, 885 tons in 2012. And you add those two numbers together and you discover that India and China alone, out of all new mine production coming in at, let's peg it at 2,700 tons, they're yanking down anywhere from 40 to 60%, depending on how you like to count. That's quite a lot, all things considered. I'm wondering, do you have any insights into that flow from west to east? Does that show up anywhere in your platform data?
Well, we're clearly seeing more demand and premium changes abroad for smaller products. I think the demand there is robust, and I think a lot of the data that's come out of Casey Research and others has shown just how dramatic the demand in China is for physical gold and silver. There was a video last week, obviously, showing that the the gold exchanges there are importing gold from London and Zurich now. So it's clear there's a trend. Now, I would argue that in India, that demand has been consistent for many, many, many years, and that there is supply available because that supply is used to serving that market. In China, you have the fact that China is the world's biggest gold producer and also its biggest importer, and so I think that area has the biggest potential to change the gold market. But from our data, we do see demand, and as Ed mentioned earlier, we even see demand for U.S. clients to purchase gold and have it stored abroad.
Interesting. And are there any favorite destinations right now for having gold stored abroad?
Singapore is actually the number one destination for all of our purchases right now at the Alliance. So as far as client assets in storage, Salt Lake City is the number one destination. And number two is Singapore, which is pretty remarkable because Singapore has only been online for about 3 months, and it's already overtaken all the other non-U.S. locations. So very quick growth there. And I would say 80% of Hard Assets Alliance customers, their purchases for non-U.S. storage, 80% is going to Singapore at this point.
So, Ed, that's very interesting because I would have just intuitively thought maybe Switzerland, you know, that bastion of freedom and safe haven and a place where people might feel they could have some of their assets safely stored out of country in a really secure location. But somehow Singapore has risen above that. How is that, do you think?
You know, this is just my personal opinion, but I think that when you look at the will of the U.S. government, right, and its ability to impose its will on foreign nations, I think the perception is that maybe Zurich is not quite as strong as it used to be. Singapore, on the other hand, has a very independent reputation. It's a strong political entity that's very pro-business, very easy to do business in, and they protect individual rights. So I think Singapore, in many ways, is the new Switzerland.
That's fascinating how things change. Savneet, what did you have to say around that?
I was going to say the same thing. I think Ed hit the nail on the head. I think people are looking for new areas to protect their wealth, and Singapore's shown for a long time now an ability, a high respect to private property. And when you're buying gold, I think that matters quite a bit. And I think that's even if you look at what Ed mentioned in Salt Lake City being popular, I think that's popular because Utah as a state has always had great respect for private property, going back to, you know, to some of its original founding in history. So I think we as humans look for areas that seem to respect private property, and obviously Switzerland and particularly Zurich and Geneva have changed a little bit in the last few years in their ability to disclose. And I think people have decided to move more broad.
Well, I certainly would agree with the idea that to the extent to which United States Treasury can reach out and touch companies over in Switzerland, which they certainly have done in the past few years, but more importantly, what happened after Cyprus and the general imposition of the idea across the entire EU that assets are now imperishable, even if they are not related to or in any way responsible for said losses that might be existing within that system. I mean, they've just really started to encroach in a very worrisome way, at least in principle in Cyprus's case and more broadly conceptually in words that have been spoken since then. So I could certainly understand why Europe is no longer a favored destination, and that makes a lot of sense. So I was wondering, is there anything in your experience that besides the rising of Singapore to the number two destination that's showing that? Are you seeing flows of gold out of Europe? Is that showing up yet?
We're not seeing that yet. What we are seeing is European clients choose not to store in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that is the answer. The other thing we've seen is a demand just to store in different locations. You know, we have, through the Hard Assets Alliance, we have a location in Melbourne, Australia, and that was a result of client interest and client demand. So we are seeing things out there, but ability to track flows out leaving Europe is a little bit harder to find.
Right. All right, so let's turn to our attention to perhaps somebody who's listening to this who has not yet bought precious metals, been thinking about it. So for all those who've yet to buy, what would your advice be at this moment?
Well, again, this is Ed. From my perspective, my advice would be if you've been looking at precious metals, hopefully the events of the last 2 weeks have illuminated the fact that you really, unless you are buying it purely to trade, and you want the ultimate in liquidity, and you're truly just short-term speculating, you really need to own physical metal. And I would suggest that you store it somewhere other than your house, which is I think a mistake that a lot of people make, is that they pile it up in their house, and there's several risks to that. There's the obvious, there's the threat of theft, and 90% of the time that theft usually involves someone that you know, and also the fact that precious metals can melt. So if you have a fire, and you have a chunk of your assets in your basement or in a sleeve of a lamp, they might be gone. So my advice, short, would be own physical and store it somewhere safe.
All right.
Yeah, you know, I'll look at it as more from the investment side. If you talk to great investors around the world or people who never turned out to be great investors, I think they'll always say they wish they bought when there was lots of fear in the street. They wish they bought when markets were down. You know, I work with a partner, and he and I always talk about, you know, I should have put my entire portfolio into equities at the bottom of 2008 or 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should have had my portfolio in home builders a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, when there are times of great chaos and great sell-off, you always look back and wish you had actually acted on that dip. I think now we're getting to that point where that might be happening in precious metals, and so if you've been on the sideline, if you're fully convinced, then you should absolutely get in the market. If you're not convinced, maybe you go in with a portion of what you had originally planned. But getting in the market is very important. It's keeping you tied to the market and active what's going on. I think it's very important to partake in it. And towards Ed's point, if you are buying, you know, the platform of Hard Asset Alliance, there's nothing that's safer, more secure, and more transparent. And it's very important, whether you use the Hard Asset Alliance or anybody else, to work with a high-quality vendor, because this is your wealth, this is your money at risk, and you just don't want to take a risk with it. So it's really important to do your diligence and find a vendor who can provide you all the services that you really need.
Indeed, all the services, and, you know, as we learned with MF Global and other things like that, you really have to understand the fine print really well in some cases. So understanding that the custodial arrangements, they vary, and some of them are really good and some of them aren't. I will point out that Adam and I did a lot of due diligence on HAA and the whole system, and came to the conclusion that it satisfied all the things we needed to see to really tick off and say this is as confident as we can be with independent third-party audits and a system of custodial trust networks that looked really good and solid, as solid as they can be. And really the key message that I'm getting out of what happened in this past week and a half is that, here's my point of view, we are still in the early stages of this bull market in precious metals. There will be a time when it will make a lot of sense to transition out of these substances into other things. We are really far from that moment. I know that because so many people are not yet invested in gold and silver. So we haven't really hit the public participation phase of this market. But when we do, I think this past week taught me that your access to metals is going to be as important as anything else out there. And what I really like about the Hard Assets Alliance and the trading platform you've stitched together is that there are 15 dealers, and some of them are very large, and so that's about as liquid a market as I could imagine being able to tap into. And so I just think that's a real plus. And it's going to be, you know, when we get into the real frenzy moment of this market, it'll be interesting. We won't note it necessarily in lines that are queuing up around the block in Hong Kong. We'll see that pretty much everywhere. And the similar sort of virtual lines will be queuing up all across the internet. And so having access to the ability to trade both in and out of, but particularly to obtain metals in this next stage is just going to be critical. And so what I like about your platform is it's got about as much depth as I could imagine personally having access to as a guy sitting at a computer screen with a mouse in my right hand.
Yeah, Chris, I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, that's exactly why we got behind this platform and partnered with GBI, is because of those exact reasons: access to liquidity, being able to own physical metal and yet still have ETF-like liquidity, and being able to do it online in a transparent manner.
Savneet?
I think when you look at a physical platform, you need to look at three things. One is institutional nature. You just don't want to go anywhere. You want somewhere where your money is safe. And that means everything from the buying to the vaulting to the audit to the insurance. then I think you want to make sure you're getting a great price, and Hard Hats Appliance does a fantastic job of making sure your price is bid out to an active network and the best price wins. And then third is liquidity and sell side. So you don't just want to buy gold and store it somewhere. You want to be able to sell it when you need to sell it, or if you want to sell it, or if you need to find a way to transfer your metals in, you need to do that as well. So I think those are the three elements. If I was an investor, I'd look at, and the Hard Asset Alliance was absolutely built for those needs.
Well, absolutely. I'd really like to thank you both so much for your time today and what you're doing. It's just been a fantastic conversation. And I'd like to invite listeners who want to find out more about the Hard Asset Alliance. They can go to peakprosperity.com, scroll down to the bottom of the main page to the resources section, click on the link that says where to buy gold and silver. That'll get you to a page where the HAA benefits are described in detail. Or you can go to the website hardassetsalliance.com. Note that assets is plural in that, so that's hardassetsalliance.com. And you can find out more there. So, you know, we heard it here. The fundamentals for gold and silver haven't changed. Education is up. Institutional buying has been strong, as has individual buying. And it's been a record week and a half here. And so we're going to watch that carefully and learn more as we go along. So Ed and Savneet, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Chris. Great talking to you.
Thank you.